I see Swanigan moving so fluidly with the ball. Like, he's so naturally just cerebral with the basketball. It's great.
Hey, let's just start up and just talk about the lineup and what this impact is with Swanigan included, because I think we could probably spend an hour just talking about that, I think.
Oh, I'd love to spend an hour just talking about that. Oh my god. Okay.
Welcome to the Blood Sports Handsome Hour, Purdue Basketball Beat starring Anish. Is that a good intro?
That's a good one. Yeah, I like
that. That was really good. That was
Anish, awesome. Anish is here with us. Andy is here with us. Dowdy Dowderson is here. Mike Henry is here in spirit. But as I say every time we do one of these, I still have yet to see proof that he exists. So this is just all Anish, you can't do multiple voices tonight. So I think that's really what it comes down to. So.
We were told that we sound similar, apparently. So.
Yeah, there's some similarities there. I can tell you apart. Well, I can tell when you're doing his voice as well.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
So it's a very special mid-May episode, Boyle Sports, on air. And let's talk first about the most important man in Indiana right now, Dan Dackett. No. Let's actually never speak of him again.
He's great.
We actually never did speak of him, and somehow we got lumped into being evil and stupid with everyone else.
Did you see the website of a recent posting directed at Dan Dockage?
On our site?
Yeah.
Yes, I actually am one of the editors of our site. And,
I didn't know if you visited it. I stop by
once a month at least.
Okay.
And I count up all Anisha's posts, and when I'm done doing that, I exhale. anyway. So take us away, Anish.
Yeah. you know, I yeah. What a week
what a
ago?
Day
this was a disaster a week ago, right? Like we had two mediocre basketball players coming in. I feel like we can say that. Like we had one mediocre basketball player in Weatherford. Like he's okay. He's a Big Ten. He's like a bench Big Ten player. And we had one shooter who's a project. Right. This could have been an unmitigated disaster.
You think it was going to be a disaster without him?
I think it could have been.
In Anisha's defense, he has been consistent on his assessment of this year's incoming traditional recruiting class.
It's not. They're
the
not.
Problem with that, Anish, is those words are gonna toast you. I think, especially now. I think what's gonna happen now. No, I think it's gonna happen quicker than that because I think Klein's gonna get a lot of open looks.
I don't know.
You don't think he'll be on the court, Anish?
No, I don't completely.
Hey, let's just start up and just talk about the lineup and what this impact is with Swanigan included, because I think we could probably spend an hour just talking about that, I think.
Oh, I'd love to spend an hour just talking about that. Oh, my God.
Well,
okay.
What's funny is, so for those of you...
Hold on a second, real quick, before you go. Anish, yeah. Could you say that again in that exact same way, please?
I can never repeat that.
Don't worry, Ryan. I've got it. I'll clip it and I'll loop it over and over.
And over.
It. It'll be your ringtone. For those of you who don't follow,
get like, oh, boiler down. I could say that over and over and talk about you for an hour.
So, if you don't follow Anish on Twitter, then I don't know what's wrong with you because he'll entertain
exactly
you, if nothing else.
Nothing else.
He has a tweet, and I'll put a link to it somewhere, probably in a post somewhere. That I loved it earlier today. Anish, you said definitely haven't spent an absurd amount of time thinking about this. And you were not only were you thinking about lineups, but you were allotting minutes to guys. Which
yeah,
I,
for sure.
I love it. But what's hilarious is it backing up what you said earlier? Ryan Klein's not even. He's apparently not even dressing. He's a DMP coach's decision, apparently, for the next year, it looks like. So,
they're the garbage.
He'll be an excellent tutor. He'll be a good tutor.
Well, we have 15 players, and then we have Weatherford, McKeeman, Klein, Toyer, and Taylor. You can't have more than the 10-man lineup. I don't see it.
Well, I love how you're putting these guys with the walk-ons.
Well,
I
mean,
They're freshmen.
Flotsam and Jetsam. They're just tossed in there. Okay, so let me just...
I think Klein will be a real player. I think he's going to be a very good player, but he's going to be as good... If he plays this year, he'll be as impactful as Ryan Smith was as a freshman.
Well, so let me just jump in here. And these, I want to, because Andy made the point that we should talk about the lineup, and we should. So I'm just going to, just to get it rolling, I'm going to read off your, I don't know if this is where you landed. This is one of your fun starting fives, right? But PJ, running the point, which I think is interesting if you think he'll actually start over Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Ray Davis.
Mm-hmm.
Vince Edwards.
So you say of course, though, but is it of course? I mean, I think that's what we talked through.
Ray Davis, yes, I think.
I don't think Ray or Edwards is a no brainer, to be honest.
So I kind
Davis?
Of agree.
Davis, yeah, so, isn't Shulman to start?
He's a lock.
We'll get into it.
Yeah. Okay. Keep going.
So PJ Davis, Edwards, Swenigan, and him is where your starters, and then your and just correct me if I'm saying it wrong, but I think your primary replacements off the bench are Hill. Dakota, Kendall Stevens, Smotherman, who you only got getting 8 minutes backing up Swanigan, mm-hmm. and Haas.
Mm-hmm.
So you think Biggie? See, here's, I know we could go in a million directions here, but you think Swanigan's going to play a lot and going to start right away?
Yeah, I think that there's no way he would have come otherwise.
Yeah,
and,
you're probably right about that.
And I think that Painter cannot and will not renege on that. Like, he is, if he says, like, that, it's worked for him now, but until now it's worked against
him. Don't you think he made that same deal with Ronnie Johnson?
Yeah, and look at what happened. I mean, like, and I think the guys at Golden Black, which, by the way, huge shout out to Golden Black, they've been doing an unbelievable job. For this whole mess of a saga, they have been right every single time, so they're great.
Karpik and Newbert don't speak out of turn. They really don't. That's been really, really consistent, and that's what one of our friends, with a separate conversation, Jay and I did a week ago, and he said he's coming. Just kind of assured us that it was a done deal, and I felt more than shaky the further we got from that leaked story, you know?
And Newbert just kept saying, like, there's no reason for him to commit immediately. There's also no reason for him to wait, but there's no reason for him to commit immediately. So, you know, he's just taking his time and making sure that his 19-year-old self isn't going to change his mind again or whatever. But
he's the adult in the room, kind of, when it comes to all the information that gets passed around.
Yeah, man, they did a great job with this. But anyway, they had a great point in saying that, I don't know, like a lot of the, in terms of this rotation, you could either just throw out the most talented players we have, in which case there are four locks to start: Davis, Edwards, Swanigan, and Hammonds. However, Davis and Edwards are two players who absolutely wouldn't mind coming off the bench. They are, like, the mentality of it. Those are the kind of players that would say, fine, let's come off the bench, let's dominate for 40 minutes instead of just our starters dominating, put in some shooters around the two big men, and go to work. I actually think Davis is the one that would go to the bench first, because I think Edwards and Swanigan offer this beautiful versatility in the starting lineup. Hill, I think, I projected him not to be Octius, because how can you predict another Octius?
Okay.
So I think PJ, towards the end of the year, if you remember, he did significantly better on defense than we all thought. He was a better shooter, especially in the clutch situations, than we all thought. And he developed some chemistry, so I think he's going to end up with a starting nod. But I could absolutely see Stevens or Matthias, whichever the hot hand is at the time, sliding in for Davis, and then Davis coming off the bench.
I think those are good thoughts. Can I give you my starting five?
No, absolutely.
I've got McKeeman, Weatherford, McKeeman, Weatherford, Klein, Matthias, and Haas.
That is a mother of a bench, though.
It's the mother of a bench. All stars.
Imagine when they wear out the other team's starters and you get to put in that, you know, you got AJ and Swanigan. And, oh, my God.
That is a tough pitch. It's good. It's a bit of a – the thing that I'll say, here's my thought about Davis. That's my only contention point is Davis. I think Edwards, you could argue – I think Painter will do what he's done for a while, which is – just mess around with the lineups. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't seen any reason since JJ and Smooge left, right? Because it's not even when Hummel was there, the lineup messed around a little bit, you know. So I just don't think he can keep Davis off the floor because of his philosophy. And Davis was such a catalyst of making things work this year, kind of really changing the tenor of what Purdue basketball looked like for a couple of years. I just don't think Painter will allow that to start the game on the bench. That's just my opinion.
See, and my theory, this is my theory, is that halfway through the season, the point guard experiments don't work, and I could see them throwing in Matthias at the one. Just, and I'm not saying he's a great ball handler, super athletic, but he's can protect the ball and you can get the ball up court. And kind of
like, before you go any further, wasn't this a point that Anish, were you like really angry at Jay and I about
yeah,
that?
Man. I don't understand where this whole point Matthias comes from. I really
Keaton Grant wasn't a point, but he was able to run the motion offense.
Keaton was a point by necessity. He was a point by necessity.
Well, that's where we're at right now, isn't it?
Is it not possible that a guy that's 5'8" and a transfer can't run it? I mean, I think it's a pretty good possibility, isn't it? Because we really don't like we're all alluding to, it's tough to expect much out of Hill for a myriad of reasons. You know, it really is tough. And Thompson, I like Thompson, but, I mean, the quickness is an issue, right? I don't think his brain is an issue. I think he's a very smart player. I think he plays under control. He's a decent shooter. He'll get open looks. I think those are all good things. I just think if you play, let's say, play a team that's longer, play a team that's quicker, I think Thompson will struggle.
I don't think we play, like, quick. I think we sacrifice that when we – gave Biggie a scholarship and gladly sacrificed it.
Yeah, but sacrificed it.
We are playing 40 possessions a night and we are winning 40 possessions a night. We are winning games like 60
to 50. I can hear you smiling
as
you say that. We're going to kill college basketball.
We're going to kill college basketball.
Well, another tweet you said, which is, I know you're the way you like rub your hands together with glee, but there was the one where you said, I want Purdue to not only win a national title, but have it handed to them. Everyone writes articles about how Purdue has ruined college basketball by grinding it, which would make them Wisconsin of the 90s, right?
Like a better at being ugly Virginia of last year.
Oh, jeez. That was unwatchable.
That's going to be us, boy. That's going to be us.
Nah, I think there's going to be more scoring time.
Here's what I think. How about this? Let's get a little composite. Let's take a little Virginia of last year, Wisconsin of, say, 2000, add in a dash of UConn. When they were just massive, right? Because they were just so big and strong and could get every rebound, right? That, to me, you've got a little bit of a picture of what Purdue could be. But do you think these guys, let me ask you guys all a question, can this group build enough chemistry in a short enough time to be a serious player, I mean, in one season?
Well, this team did this past year, built a lot of chemistry, I thought.
So are you asking, is this a real question here, what the impact of Swanigan is going to do to the chemistry of the current team?
No, it's not just that. See, it's the loss of Octius. That's one part of that chemistry, which is huge, obviously. I mean, it was clear when Octius was hit on all cylinders, Purdue was a different team, right? Can we all agree with that, right?
Yeah.
And so you withdraw that major part, right? You add in a new part, and you ask some players to have a different role. Like what if things are like what Anish said, where you're asking guys to come off the bench that didn't come off the bench as freshmen, you know, or Edwards specifically. I mean, can that work? Can that happen quickly? If it can, do you guys think it takes till January? What do you think?
You know what my answer to that is, it's not going to be a problem because of Riffield Davis and Hamas and everything I've heard them. I've heard them on JMV and Dockage, and they are adults. They're mature. Mm-hmm. They hold the team accountable. And, you know, I wouldn't say this in the previous three or four seasons, but, you know, now that we're actually building some depth in the upperclassmen, I think there could be some continuity, and I think the culture kind of will take care of those problems.
Yep, totally agree. Totally. I implicitly trust Davis and AJ.
It's probably the first time Purdue's had this. Not people are excited that, you know, they've got a McDonald's All-American, but it's not just that, right? It's the combination of having, because they've had talent. It's having talent with that kind of senior leadership, or maybe not even just seniors, but, you know, upperclassmen leadership, guys who, like the way you guys just articulated it, the fact that they're the adults people listen to, and that's what this team hasn't had all in one place, which then brings us to, Anish, another bone of contention you always have with us is what does this do to expect? I was going to say, what can Matt Painter parlay this into more than a tournament appearance in a Sweet 16 maybe? And second part of that is, what does it do to the expectations and demands on him? Does it? It has to raise them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course, I think. I mean, naturally. Like, now the expectation is top three in the Big Ten, top two in the Big Ten, like, you know, fight with Maryland and Michigan or whoever for that top spot. And a tournament, like a second weekend at the minimum tourney run, right? Like, I think, you know, what's the baseline, Sweet 16 here? Exactly. See, again, measuring stuff by the tournament is such an awful idea.
Agreed, but it's the only thing you've got, isn't it?
No, give me regular season success. Give me the 12-win Patriots every year will make the playoffs and have the most talented team in the league, and eventually they're going to win. Mm-hmm. The San Antonio Spurs.
Can I interject a little something about Maryland really quickly? And maybe this is me talking crazy. Okay, I know everybody is on their NADs. I mean, it doesn't matter who you talk to in college basketball. I think the loss of Des Wells is a big deal, right? He's gone, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, I think that's a big deal. I think he was a big glue guy. Every time I watch Maryland, they need a big play. He would do it. When other guys would kind of come and go. I know they've got a lot of talent. I get that, but I guess I'm a skeptic. It's kind of like everybody was big after Nebraska in the Big Ten last year. You know, mm-hmm. Nebraska had a lot of things returned. Granted, they didn't have as much talent coming in. But I'm skeptical of this Maryland program. That's all.
No, they're bringing in Diamond Stone. And that kid
what
is
a great foreign name.
What a guy, that's a great name. That's just a great name.
Diamond Stone? You want to name your son Diamond Stone? Ramaswamy?
He's DeMarcus Cousins 2.0. He's incredible. Like he is like cut of the same mold. He might not be as good, but he is that similar huge athletic just big man in the middle. Like he's gonna be really good. Melo Trimble.
Cut like a diamond.
Kind of like you?
Cut like a diamond.
Cut like, yes.
From the same mold.
Jesus.
Horrible. Horrible. Awful. Horrible. Awful. Just horrendous.
I think, I think Maryland is, they should be the favorites. They are the rightful Big Ten favorites. But what's interesting is that Purdue
is Wisconsin quitting basketball? Because no one's talking about them either.
Yeah, but they lost.
I look at that, and they're never mentioned in the top three, and you're like, it's freaking Mo Ryan, right?
I don't know. See, it's funny. I hear the exact opposite. I hear everyone saying, well, you know, it's. Well, I hear what you're saying, that point, you know, it basically it's a it's a no-brainer that they're going to be a top four, but they lost a lot of talent.
They lost a ton. And the big
I fight that it's almost unprecedented for a Bryan team to lose this much. And mm-hmm. I think that, I don't know. I guess I say this every year, so maybe it's.
Right, right.
I don't know. I don't know.
Bo Ryan could have the four of us and one gigantic white guy, and he'd be fine.
I don't. I mean, like, who are they building around? Nigel Hayes right now?
Sure. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I don't think it matters, honestly.
I think the rest of the Big Ten got better, and Wisconsin took a step back. I think so. We got Maryland, Purdue. I get Michigan. I think will be up there. And then I guess
IU can be up there.
I was gonna say. Then I guess Indiana, Michigan State. Ohio State and Wisconsin, like that's the top half of the Big Ten right there.
Although you know this IU, oh go ahead.
No, you're good.
I was gonna say this IU Love Fest though, and I and part of it I think is because I also pay attention to local Indianapolis media. But I mean there is this IU Love Fest where they were putting in almost top 10, you know, between 10 and 15. No one's talking about Purdue yet. We bring back a more complete team. And we whooped them both times last year. Yet, you know, they're the team to beat this year. I mean,
yeah. Listen, the movement, man. The movement.
It's the expectation.
Movement too. Number two movement.
I don't see how IU is going to be, you know, great. Thomas Bryant. Mm-hmm. He'll be good. Yogi will be great as usual. Justin Blackmon will be good, and they don't have depth. I don't think they have depth. Like unless an Oladipo comes out of nowhere, which you know the last two times.
Well, that's what a lot of people are expecting is that everyone's going to make these like Oladipo like leaps, and he had a very like he was a hard worker, and that whole team you know that he was around were hard workers. Mm-hmm. They don't have that same character that team had.
No,
they
don't
weren't
see it.
Just hard workers. They were stupidly talented. That's the thing. People. That's kind of a once every 10 years type of team. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a good program. I mean, everything clicked there, and they got to the Sweet 16. You cannot discount how bad of a defensive coach Tom Crean is. When you're looking at what you think IU is going to be, you can't discount that. You can't discount the fact he doesn't know how to use a big man. So they got a blue chip big man. Congratulations. He's going to do the same thing that Zeller did. He'll get worse during the season, and then he'll leave probably.
Well, the problem is that Zeller was so just singularly talented.
Yeah, yeah.
He was such an intelligent player.
Yep.
I think Swanigan is actually pretty similar. Like, I see Swanigan moving so fluidly with the ball. Like, he's so naturally just cerebral with the basketball. It's great. And
really good in space. Really good in space. He really understands how to direct traffic from the high post.
Hey, will you guys talk about his body?
It's so silky. So silky. That's my favorite thing in the world is whenever you can hear read an article or hear a sports reporter talk about how you know, he's got a body right now that he just looks like a player, and they start talking about his arm. Look at those arms. There's that writer at Golden Black does it over and over.
No, but get back to Swanigan, though. Here's the thing.
Is it Swanigan or Swanigan?
I switch back and forth, so I hedge my bets.
I'm
No, so I think, though, the key to his success, because he has to play the four, and let's be honest, he would probably – his skill set is a 5. I know – I understand why he's playing the 4. But I think his ability to knock down that elbow shot, kind of like a David West role, I think that's the key to his success. And I think that maybe shouldn't be overstated that he's a work in progress in that role. I mean that's not – he's not playing to his skill set necessarily. So that I think could be a potential issue with the offense.
I did a deep dive this afternoon into like the whatever tape is available and whatever tape has been available in the last mm-hmm. year. I think he plays better facing the basket.
I do too.
Like he not plays better, but he looks so like comfortable. Like, I mean, I was saying this on Twitter earlier before, he looks like Isaac Haas when he doesn't have the ball. Like, he looks uncoordinated when he runs. He looks like he struggles to get up and down the court. Then you put the basketball in his hand, and he looks so fluid. I mean, his footwork is perfect. He has a nice jab step, like at the elbow. He works really well. He sees the floor really well. I actually think, he's a center in high school and at most college places because he can just overpower. Like, that's what he's done before. But I don't think his hands are actually as good as people have been saying they are. I think he's a good rebounder. So crashing from a distance will help a little bit, like from the four position if he's spotting up near the elbows. I think he's a great passer. I actually think his best skill is his passing ability. And his back-to-the-basket game looks so good in college because he's going up against these tiny shrimps. And he can just go.
Guys, I just came up with it. Go ahead. All right. You guys all sitting down. I'll take that giggle as a yes. Is what okay. We said we're going to go slow, right? The offense is going to be a slow plotting offense, right? Check, right?
Yes.
Swanigan is a good passer. Yes. You need a point guard. Yeah. Caleb Swanigan will run the point. And Haas and Hammonds will be the twin tower.
The trifecta. Now
that's a big lineup right there. Edwards and Davis
and that's their natural positions. So break it down, it makes sense.
That's the thing. You gotta look at it analytically. That's what I like to do.
Did you? I mean,
how about this question?
A deeper dive than you did, Anish.
I
didn't dive deep enough.
That's true. I didn't go deep.
No. How about this question? And this is a crazy question, I'm sure, because we're all in the same mind frame. Like you guys were talking about playing time, obviously. Swanigan is a starter right out of the gate because that's the deal with a guy like that. Say, well, you're probably gonna start right away. Now, can you give me a percentage? Because I think there is a possibility here for a couple reasons that, like, you know, you said playing a new position, that sort of thing. That he might have a little bit of a growing pains. He's not got his body like, you know, we were talking about. We love it, but it's not quite a. You know, it's not a Big Ten ready looking body. You know, we've seen guys at Michigan State that look like that kind of, you know, get sculpted as they go along. What is the percentage of chance that he will be back as a sophomore? Give me the Jay. You shake your head right away as the words are barely even out of my mouth.
No. I wasn't going to shake my head.
I say 80.
Yeah, I was going to say 60. I think he's more likely than not back.
I think
to your point, I look at it as a development year. I mean, there's
and
I think Roosevelt Barnes kind of said as much that, you know, it's a development. You know, there's some of the skill sets needed as a four. You know, are not his strong suit.
So the other thing is that Purdue was such a lot. We were talking about this earlier. I think it was on one of the basketball beats that Purdue was such a logical choice for him. Because the pressure on him would have been so low. For the number 9 recruit in the country, the pressure on him at Purdue is incredibly low because we have a potential Big Ten Player of the Year in A.J. Hammonds. We have the Defensive Player of the Year in Ray Davis. We have Vince Edwards, who is primed for an all-Big Ten season. Mm-hmm. We have Haas coming off the bench. Like, the pressure that's going to be on him to produce is going to be so low. And I do agree with all of you that it's a little bit of a transition year for him. And I think the next year with Haas, I think he'll be completely in his own. But, yeah, I think it's more likely than not we see him next year.
Let me ask you this.
How about this one, Andy?
Oh, okay. I just want to know, do you really say, I mean, based on from what I hear from you, you want Kendall Stevens and Mathias come off the bench, right?
Well, I mean that's situational. If you wanna put Davis to the bench and bring one of the shooters on, that's fine.
But, yeah. That scares me.
I know, I understand. Yeah. I mean Davis or Edwards. Like, yeah, I think those four are fairly interchangeable. And I think they're good enough personalities and that they can understand going to the bench, coming off the bench, playing a reduced amount of minutes, and doing the best they can in those.
Just be clear that you're talking about Vince, Ray Davis, and then
Mathias and Stevens.
Okay, yes. Well, but I don't love anything that means reduced minutes for Ray Davis right now, because the guy Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. Like I don't know. I want him out there because they're going to be lacking for defense, but
it's offense. My concern for both of them is just having a reliable shooter to spread it out to the floor.
Okay, but don't you guys agree?
I completely agree with that.
You know that probably this situation probably helps a guy like Kendall Stevens, right? Because he'll be relied on. They'll still use scoring, but I think he's less of a focal point now.
It creates a tremendous amount of space. I mean, that's the thing. Tremendous amount of space. We cannot discount that. I think it's a huge difference maker. And I also think, even though it hasn't been talked about, I think his finger was really bad. I think he's going to have a monster year.
That picture is still – that was like photo of the year quality. He's walking off the court with it just aiming the wrong, just like down. And he's
He's calm about it.
He was smiling. He was like smirking.
I'd say just chop the hand off. Chop the hand off.
My basketball career is over.
That's it.
Or put me to sleep like a racehorse. I'm done. It hurts really, really bad. It's going to fall off. Okay, another question, another hypothetical question. This one's very serious. Much like my Swanigan point guard. Okay, this is a good one. Okay, obviously there's a bit of a logjam now in the middle, right, in the front court. So what are the chances that Painter redshirts Haas but gives him a chance to fill out next year? Get a little stronger.
I would love that, actually. Because
you can bench press a barn?
Exactly. Need to get him up to 450. That's lean 450.
I was out in the driveway with my son the other day, and I was shooting. It was mine when I was a kid. I still have a little mini basketball, and I was trying to shoot mid-range jumpers and free throws with that, and because I was trying to approximate life as Isaac Haas, because that's probably what. Have you ever tried to shoot like a true jump shot form with a mini basketball?
Impossible. That's what I assume it's like to shoot free throws when you're Shaquille O'Neal, or when you're Dwight Howard, or when you're DeAndre Jordan.
You're throwing a softball at the thing.
Exactly, and it's like you're throwing it at eye level too. Like you're
it's like this, right? You ever see like the ball so little? It's just on the. It's either on the fingertips, and then when it's stuck, it would roll down to his palm, just like us. You'd see the ball move, you're like, oh, no, that's a bad sign. The ball
now he's just going to push it towards the –
Exactly.
You know what, to be honest, though, I thought his free throw looked pretty – like, he got dogged on a lot, but I thought he was a pretty good shooter.
Yeah. I'm just saying I think it's hard. I wasn't meaning to rip on him. Oh, yeah.
He got rid of that deep knee bend. Do you remember how deep the knee bend was in the beginning of the season? I was like, man, there's so much movement in his – in his free throw shooting, you got to get rid of some of those variables. You know, think about how far he's moving with a deep knee bend. That's what?
That's like an entire down.
It's taller than me.
Oh. Got to go for the low hanging fruit there. That's the,
yeah, I know. Yeah, I had to.
That was good. Well done. Well played. Serious question. This is a serious question.
Sure.
No, this one's really serious. Will Klein or Weatherford be redshirted, Anish?
I think Klein will. Which one? I think Klein will. I think their family, people were reporting. I think that was actually a part of the recruiting process. And you pair that with the fact that Anthony Johnson redshirted his first year.
Back?
Like a similar body type or a similar role. Yeah, exactly.
Donnie Hale, another one.
And the quotes that Painter says he wished he would have redshirted Ryan Smith.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, can I tell a story real quick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Story time, Andy.
This is not related to anything we're talking about.
Is this about how you got your picture?
yes. No. So I was at the airport last week, and we had a delayed flight. And Patrick Beatty sat down right across from me. And he's in his, he's still wearing the basketball garb, and he has that, the backpack, that tells everybody that you're a football athlete.
Yeah.
But, and usually, I could strike up a conversation. I was, I drank a little bit. I sat there for 20 minutes. I couldn't think of a thing to say to him. I I did not have one positive question or anything. So then I just kind of walked away, and that was that.
What I heard is that he just his attitude was never great. I just heard that he wasn't a very good bench team guy, and
maybe, he was a boon though for the football program.
That was huge. That was huge. That was one of Danny Hope's biggest.
Did he ever see the field?
No, he did. I remember seeing him. I think he was on the special teams then.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm.
It was good for him though. You know.
I have a hard time disparaging the kid. I'm sure he's.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
I know you guys do too. I wish it would have gone better for him. The thing that's amazing that I reiterate is his junior year, he was a blue chip tight end recruit. Ohio State, and I think there were two or three big time programs that were after him.
Well, in basketball, he wasn't that bad of a basketball recruit too. I know not the same. Same level, and I think because Ohio State, I think, offered him for football, but he, I think Painter was trying to turn him into something that he wasn't, and that kind of hurt his development. Kind of like when he had DJ Bird try to play the center.
Yeah, well, I mean, those teams were such a disaster, though. You look at the roster,
yeah.
And Painter had 2 years where he struck out on everybody. And, we struck out on Gary Harris, Brandon Dawson, and Chase and Randall. Yeah, those were the three big ones that Painter spent a ton of time on, and that I thought Swanigan would fall into.
In that Gunana guy.
Did he spend much time on Beal? Or not Beal. Beal. Didn't he recruit
Beal? He did. He started out, yeah.
Did he really?
Yeah. I thought it was semi-serious, he was, Purdue was in the running, for, the early, sophomore, junior year.
Where's Beal from?
Louisville. Oh, is he? I think he's from Chicago.
Oh, really? Oh, my God. I had no idea. Oh, my God. Purdue with Bradley Beal. Good Lord. Oh.
Well, I thought Randall was a great fit, honestly. Man. I came back because I thought that everything I read and heard about him, I was like, this kid's got Purdue all in. Turns out his career at Stanford was exactly like I thought it would have been at Purdue, and he was very good, and he was solid, and he was a 4-year guy.
God, he was such a stud. He put up Etuan Moore numbers.
But at the same time, career. you can't really dog up for picking Stanford either.
No, I would.
No,
you just kind of shrug your shoulders and.
Yeah, when Stanford
they brought Condoleezza Rice to the show in, and
it's pretty awesome
with that.
So, how about this question? This is one impossible to predict, but it is you start hearing whispers of, what the polls look like, and, certain guys like Goodman or whoever that don't really matter, start talking about what their top 25 is. With this development from Purdue, where does Purdue land in the really early top 25s?
Purdue last year was – when they were playing really good ball in February, right? I think we would agree that they were not. They were getting votes, I think, right? But they were.
Yeah, they were out. They were just out.
So they were just out of the top 25 with that team. So it's hard to think that this is not a top 20 team to start.
In a lot of the early top 10s, they had us in the honorable mention category, whatever.
So top 15 team.
So yeah. I think we'd float around 15 to 20.
That is a starting point. I honestly, I'll say this, and maybe this is just years of watching Purdue, maybe, but I'd take 15 to 18 happily and think, okay, there's a measure of respect, but I don't want to be 8 or 9 or something.
No, so
I don't want that expectation at the gate.
My ideal spot, and I was talking about this with a buddy of mine, my ideal spot for Purdue would be what Notre Dame was last year. This unbelievably talented, very dangerous
team. They were great.
With two NBA prospects on their team, in Connaughton and Jerrion Grant, and they just floated around 15, and were the third best
all year. Like
yeah,
all year.
All year. Yeah. We're the third best team in the best conference in the country, and then made a beautiful run in March. I mean, that was a great season.
Did they lose to Kentucky in the Elite Eight? Is that what that was?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, and they shouldn't. It was. Yeah, we talked about that on our last one. Yeah,
they played so well in that game, too.
That was probably the game of the tournament, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that was...
Oh, no, Kentucky. I'm sorry. Kentucky-Wisconsin.
Yeah, that was better. But I think we said... it was kind of like a throwaway thing. I don't even know if it made it into our last podcast. But again, we were talking about that, Anish. And it still bothers me the way that Bray handled the end of that game. He ends up leaving himself like 7 seconds and no timeouts.
Yep.
I don't understand how you can get in that position. I just don't.
Especially when you have a billion and a half.
We have a billion and a half timeouts. Like, there's no excuse for that. Which there will be fewer next year.
Yeah, I like these rule changes. I don't know what people absolutely are complaining about.
Well, I got a question. This is one of my basketball questions, Anish. I had thought about asking you this specifically. Do you think that reducing the number of seconds, do you think there's a risk that with, you know, there's a lot of criticism of college basketball today. There's a lot of guys who can't shoot and can't play basketball, quite frankly. Do you think that lowering that will make the game better because you'll have to take a shot sooner and work up a play sooner, or will it make it almost worse because it'll expose the poor shooting even more?
It's just it'll get more possessions of the same basketball. And 5 seconds isn't really that. From 35 to 30 isn't that much of an appreciable
difference. I'd rather go down to 24, but
so you're just cutting the fat at that point.
Yeah, I'm usually pretty pissed once it gets down to 5, and you know they're just
dribbling
at the top of the key.
My biggest pet peeve about cutting it from 35 to 30 is that amount of fat means that it's basically one possession. You had a lot of teams who would go through an entire play and then reset and get time to run another entire play. That I think in 30 seconds you're not going to be able to do. Or be able to do less. Now I do get the, you know, this is just get, if bad offense is bad offense, you're going to just get quicker bad offense. But it's going to reduce the amount of superfluous, like using the entire 35 seconds of the shot clock kind of plays. I think everything should just be one standardized rule, like a hybrid of the NBA and the international rule, and everybody just sticks to it. But
you mean everybody like at all levels of basketball?
Like once you graduate out of high school, yeah.
Right, so NBA and college and international. All
yeah, pro like and semi-pro leagues.
7 seconds or something.
I mean, like, so it, I don't know. I think the 30 seconds are good. I think the extra foul, you know, whatever. That's what the NBA does, so you're trying to get it close to the professional game. And then what was the other one?
Reducing, you can only, well, there's a couple things with timeouts, right? If you're within a certain, I forget how close, but if you're near immediate timeout and you call timeout, that's now immediate timeout.
There thank God.
Immediate timeout 10 seconds later, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Yeah, and then you can also carry no more than, what is it, 2 timeouts, 3, something like that, to the second half?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just get the game going.
Yeah. I forget how many you can carry now. I don't even know, honestly. There's so many, and I watch so much basketball, and I still have no idea. Because it's just.
Yeah, I mean, the NBA is trying to do something similar. It's just they don't want three-hour games anymore. That's why the intentional foul rule is going to change this offseason in the NBA. They just don't want games to take 3 hours. They want under the golden number for them is a two-hour basket. Every game you can just book 2 hours, like soccer. Like you can book a two-hour slot of your life, and you know that that's the entire game. So if you can book a two-hour and 15-minute thing for the NBA or for any basketball game, I think that's what they're trying to move to.
The only thing that's good in soccer, I love the way the teams can play up and down. I think that's freaking ridiculous. I think that's awesome. Everything else about soccer is horrible.
I love soccer, man. I enjoy soccer.
Horrible. You would. there are a couple reasons I've been quiet the last couple of minutes. I'm not going to go to number two first and back down backwards. one thing is, I think I don't know if anybody can be further apart about the NBA than Anish and I. I think that's the first thing. I do not like it when the college game moves towards the NBA game. I just don't like it. I think if they want to keep if they want them to score more, they should move the hoop down to 7 feet. I think that's the illogical thing to do.
I think that would help things a lot. I think it's absurd, to tell you the truth, that you let morons in the media define what is a good quality of
I
guess
I agree.
It makes me freaking nuts.
And you're like, Kate Billis gets on his f***ing high horse.
Exactly.
Are we allowed to say that?
Sure.
Yeah. We're not going to get regulated. We're okay. We're okay. No one's saying anyway.
No one can tell you what to say, Andy.
No.
I'm so empowered right now.
Sorry, Ryan. You were like.
There was another thing I was going to talk to you guys about, and I broke a cardinal Hansen Hour rule. I don't know what the basketball beat. I don't know what the rules are, and I know this is a composite, so I apologize, Anish.
It's Mike's not here, and that means so we can say whatever we want.
That's true.
Okay.
So here's the thing: if I've broken one of your rules too, I'm sorry, but I have peeked at another medium while on the show. I've looked over at Twitter. It seems that we've stirred a little bit of a hornet's nest. Dan Dockage is once again talking like a 4-year-old. And name calling. I mean, this guy is such a gosh. I mean, he's supposedly a guy that gets paid to do what he does. So you're supposed to have some level of professionalism. But I wrote a post about Dockage, how I think he's a hack, and I will not listen to him. I will not defend him anymore. And then he literally starts calling us names on here on Twitter. I'm not. My reading comprehension is pretty lousy to begin with. When I'm completely my attention is focused on one thing. It's probably been worse when I'm listening to you guys talk. But am I getting a good synopsis, Jay? I know this is one of the things you do. You read and you edit things for a living. Am I wrong at all about that?
Because correct? Yes, he just – well, I will say I more or less name-called him a little earlier tonight because he, again, was taking shots at us. No, well, he was taking shots at us again, saying we're playing victim. He was quoting your post. And he said that we attacked him, and I said wrong again. We're not playing victim, and we're not attacking you. Your repetitive insulting of us is quote attacking. And I wrote, and you're a coward. So I definitely did that because he is. He's a coward. Anybody who acts and behaves like he does and says the things he does, you know, not that I have any desire to be on his show and get attention for myself. I do not. But I'm an adult, and like I don't think Dockage even understands that he's dealing with like adult, like professional human beings when he starts this stuff. Like he is a mouth breathing knuckle dragger. That's what he is. That's why he's good at sports talk radio, because he can relate to those kinds of people. Like, you know, the people who spend the entire day listening to sports talk radio. And believe me, I like sports talk radio. This is not a shot at anybody who likes it, but. You know what I mean? The stereotypical.
I love good sports talk radio.
You know exactly what I'm talking about, though. We
Dan
all know
Patrick
the guy who calls up.
I like Rich Eisen. Right. I like both of them. I don't agree with everything they say, but I like Van to Pelt. Listen to them. Huh? Van Pelt? Is he? What is his new position?
He's gonna get. He took over Midnight Sports Center, and they're basically turning it into a sports talk show.
Awesome.
Van Pelt's the best.
Yep.
I worry that it'll be like, you know, some of the other shows they've tried to do late at night, and if it doesn't work, then he's no longer on the radio either. I think more SVP is better than less. But.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't care. Dockage sucks. He's going to use the – he needs the beast to be fed, and this is what does it. I mean, like, that's right. This fills 20 minutes of his time.
And that's exactly what this is. It's been fodder for a show during a pretty down sports time.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it's also he knows who his prime listeners are, and he knows how, you know, especially when things are going good for Purdue, he does a good job of tampering that with backhanded compliments and obviously making fun of the fan base, because which is so classless too, because you know he just makes these generalizations that.
It's a pretty broad group of people. I mean,
but he makes
pretty broad
up.
Group of people. He does, that's one of the things that kills me. His view of reality is way off. Like the day he started the name Colin, he kept saying it was only directed at bloggers. Well, that was not at all the case, because he did it like, and maybe he doesn't understand what he's doing. I know it's tough when you get old. Yeah, I did that. I went there. So I hope he's listening right now. I hope he listens to this on tape, because
I'm sure
searches his name. So, hell, if he's got some time to burn through.
he was so delusional. The reports he was saying, the things he was saying, it was directed just at Travis and us. It was just not correct because over and over he gets, well, you're just dumb. You're a fool. You're dumb. You're stupid. You're a poopy face. I think it's one of his. That's what he said tonight too. You go cry to mama.
You've been served.
Yeah, exactly. Pow.
Man, yeah, he's the worst. He's the worst. Whatever.
He is the worst, and I really did. I really used to defend him. I mean, Jay and I talked about it multiple times because he would say, "Man, that guy sucks," and I would say, "He's pretty good. I've been listening to him. You know, he really got after this IU man. Pretty good. I like him. You know, the ESPN games. I used a higher pitched voice. Yeah, I'd almost sing it. Yeah, exactly. I thought it was the right way to get Jay on my side, and it, not Jay Leno, but Jay Money. Okay. I guess we're kind of playing in his hands. All of his seven listeners are."
Well, I was going to say, kind of while we're talking about the media, I did listen to Michael DeCourcy talk on who was Kent Sterling. You know, about specifically, sorry, and I don't mean to bring this back to the Swanigan thing.
No,
I apologize.
Please do.
Yeah, he was really negative, and it was a very anti-Purdue rant. Basically, how can they make it happen? And I kind of found myself though agreeing with it though. As far as, I guess, lauding that the addition was going to make Purdue better. And I can't help but think that, you know, I guess I was first kind of like defensive, but at the same time, I think he's got a point. It's, I don't know.
What was he saying?
And I think a lot, well, basically that he's not playing his natural position. It's going to be a log jam down low. I think a lot of people see Swanigan as a five, and maybe that's more not being really familiar of his skill set. But I feel like that was kind of the comment. I think Dockage said it and Michael DeCourcy, but they were sure to kind of almost make it a negative thing. Like we've gotten worse.
No, he's 6'8". You know, he's 6'8" with a 7'3" wingspan. So maybe his reach and the fact that he's so much bigger than high school players makes him look like a center, but I don't see him as a collegiate center. And mostly, if you're getting a 6'8 guy to play center, it's got to be someone like Jared Sollinger, you know, for example. Sollinger, if you remember, and Swanigan, see, this is how I know that people just read, you know, the Cliff Notes when they look at players. But I've heard a lot of Jared Sollinger comparisons, and people apparently forget how stupidly athletic Jared Sollinger was in high school. People forget that he was the second best, and really by rivals in several places, the best player in that high school class. People forget how polished he was. He came out of high school, and his first like three games into Ohio State, he was averaging almost 20-10. That kid was really good. The four players that I see Swanigan closer and like in the archetype to, so that are playing in the NBA, just that style, when comparing it to their early college and high school styles of play, at the lower end are DeJuan Blair and Paul Millsap. They're very horizontal players. But they crash the boards really hard. They have a beautiful jump shot. Swanigan actually has a very, very fluid jump shot that he can do. He can unleash pretty easily, and he's got great footwork. But on the high end, I actually think he compares well to, and we've heard Zach Randolph all the time, but yeah, Zach, less athletic Zach Randolph, and Kevin Love. Actually, like a not quite as skilled Kevin Love. Kevin Love coming out of high school was a little overweight. He wasn't as great of a rebounder as he is right now, as he's known for right now. He bullied people under the basket, and he had a good-looking shot, but he wasn't quite that stretch four. Now, he was a little more polished. That's why he was the number one or number two overall recruit. But I actually think somewhere between Kevin Love and Zach Randolph, those four, Paul Millsap, DeJuan Blair, some like kind of amalgamation of that is what we're going to get from Swanigan. All of them, by the way, I'm pretty sure more than 2-year players.
Draymond Green?
Green's not bad. But Green is a little quicker. Green is so.
I mean, to me, Green was a similar body though, right out of high school. You know,
a little bit, but he played more similarly to Hummel. You know, like he was as quick. He could switch on whoever. Like back in college, like all of the NBA, people are just recently discovering how versatile he is. But he could switch on to anybody in college. He was full of like energy and defensive intensity in college. He was a good shooter in college. He wasn't, you know, as prolific of a 3-point shooter as he is now, or as dangerous, I should say. But I think he was a little quicker. I think he was more of a pure four, pure college four.
I think Zach Randolph is my favorite of those comparisons. Like that's who I would. I just think he's a.
Randolph in high school was pretty athletic, man, and Swanigan is pretty not.
Yeah.
And that's kind of his heel right now, is his athleticism, his defense, like his lateral quickness, basically quickness without the ball. It is not great, so that him at the four. So I guess defensively, I can see where some of these concerns come up. Offensively, I think it's a perfect fit. But defensively, I do see there being a little bit of a problem. But again, he's going to have to guard. He's going to be a four in the NBA. So that's the selling point, is that Painter can play him in an NBA-style rotation and say, these are your responsibilities. You're going to have to rotate, or you're going to have to switch off on this 6'5", 6'6", athletic freak. Like, go ahead. Like, go take him. Go take Brandon Dawson or whoever, or those style of players. And, you know, throw him in the deep end. Now, again, like I said, he's got a 6'4 wingspan, or a 7'4 wingspan. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think that's where he makes up for a lot of it. I think, and they're not muscle-less arms. Like, he's a big, strong boy, so he can. Mm-hmm. I think he can leverage pretty well. So I think he'll grow into it. But yeah, again, the first year, just like with all those four players I just named, the first year is going to be a little bit of an adjustment. Thankfully, we have AJ Hammonds.
Yeah, one thing I really like in that comparison group that you did, which is an impossible thing for ESPN to do, is you crossed the racial barrier while making a comparison to players. It seems like ESPN thinks you got to stay in the racial lanes. It makes me nuts, you know? Whenever a white player is scrappy. I think Kevin Love's another good one. Kevin Love's a bit taller probably, but didn't have the wingspan, right? I don't know his...
Yeah, I mean, his measurables, I think, were actually pretty similar. I can pull it up right now.
Well, you know the NBA game better than I do. I remember, you know, the guys as college players, and one thing I think that could happen with Swanigan is that, you know, he could kind of redefine himself, you know, through just, you know, growing up and getting on a workout schedule fully around. I think that'll make a difference. I think that'll make a difference with, you know, a lot of things, the way he moves. Kind of like Green changed. I know he was quick, but he was kind of like, it was entertaining. It was a novelty act almost, watching the way Green moved so much, right? But then, you know, now he just looks like a basketball player, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have any parting thoughts here?
Well, we touched on it slightly earlier, and I know Anish likes to dismiss the idea of the tournament having any importance, but I definitely get your point on it, but I do think visibility-wise, it's got a huge there's a lot of importance, and and what worries me, and this isn't, I don't think there's a solution here or there's an answer you could give me, but what worries me is this team, there's already people talking, right, like nonsensically talking about like Final Fours and national championships, and I guess it's nonsense. It's not that it's nonsensical. It's just like, man, that happened fast. Somebody talking about how excited they are that it's hard to believe that a Purdue national championship might be only a certain number of weeks away or whatever they said. And I was like, wow, man, that's. I mean, it's great that optimism is that alive. I mean, that's terrific. What worries me though is this team has no experience really with the tournament. I mean, I know they played in a game last year, but they could not have, you know, shown less in terms of closeout. And Painter looked pretty bad in coaching that game. And that's just something that I don't know, it wears on my – like, I worry a lot about being, you know, I don't know, pick a team recently, Missouri, you know, that has a 30-win season and flings out against a – what's that?
Pitt.
Yeah, well, Pitt's always done that, though, crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Pitt Athletics is like Purdue East as far as that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Glad I'm here. Glad I'm here.
By the way, you'll fit right in.
Open invitation for December 1st.
Oh, I know. We've been publicizing
it. That's right. That's right. Anybody that wants to show up, my address is, But, I don't like using the tournament as an end-all for, determining how successful your season is because, you know, the people get bounced in the tournament all the time. These fluky runs happen all the time. Like, it's not an accurate reflection. But if it happens every single year, then you start to get a trend, right? I think you can't say, this season is a failure if we don't reach the Elite Eight, right? I think realistic expectations are realistic expectations are somewhere around Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and second, third in the Big Ten. Pretty standard for the 17th best team in the country, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't a good standing for the 17th or 15th best team in the country. But again, this single elimination tournament, anything could happen. You know, like Butler in 2011, the second national tournament national title run, that team sucked. Let me tell you, because I watched a lot of that team. That team was bad, but they knew how to win in the tournament. They knew how to ugly up the game, and they had the best coach in the country. Like, I mean, not really that close. They had the best in-game coach in the country. So those are the kind of advantages that get played up in the tournament. And, you know, it's meaningful because we put meaning into it. We meaning like everybody puts meaning into it. And so fine. We've kind of come to the point where the tournament is something that needs to happen, but I don't see it as a if we don't get to X weekend, we've failed as a
I just, low I just, the bar. Low
I,
the bar.
I mean I get what you're saying.
I wanna win the Big Ten
Nish, you have me up to a point. Like I get that you make a lot of sense in that. Yeah, a great team. I mean, Kentucky this year, right? There's a lot of examples at all levels, right, of successful teams, mediocre teams that went further, great teams that didn't win at all. You and I think Michael made a great point a couple months ago. You said, I hope Kentucky wins it just because I think this group of players deserves this team. They're not hateable. They don't seem like dicks. Like they seem like you wanted to see them win because they deserved it. And now they'll fade into kind of basketball obscurity into Bolivia with Mike Tyson. And that's not fair, and I totally agree. You have me there on all that kind of stuff. And I can't quite articulate it, but there's some point where you kind of lose me there where it almost sounds like because that's possible that could happen and that it could be unfair, you're writing it off as important.
No, it still matters, but it's less important than 28 wins. I want 28 wins. Give me a 28-win season where we can win the Big Ten.
Okay, and if you say that, and then you say, and they go at least second weekend, then I can get on board with you. But it feels to me like you then say, well, whatever happens after that is what, you know, I can't contribute. It's complete crapshoot. And that's, I guess, maybe that's not what you're saying. That's kind of how it feels.
Yeah, no, that's pretty close.
But it's not a crapshoot. Here's my answer to that, though, Anish. And you've said this. A lot of people have said this. It is not. Do you think it's an accident that it's always the same, that it's always, you know, the same coaches and the same programs that advance in the tournament?
No, because there are coaches that know how to coach a single tournament. And there are coaches who are better in-game coaches than other people, right? I mean but first of all, to condemn someone for their lack of tournament success when they have all sorts of other success, like Bo Ryan before the last 2 years. Like, there was apparently an argument that Bo Ryan was a good coach because he couldn't make the Final Four. I mean, like, until he made it this year, anybody outside of the Big Ten was like, meh, Wisconsin. We know that Bo Ryan has never finished below fourth.
And everybody does that about the Big Ten. Everybody does that about the Big Ten if they're not a Big Ten fan, and you know it. They do that about Michigan State. I had a guy mouthing off to me about Michigan State because they only have one national title in all those runs.
Exactly. Like, how idiotic does that sound? How idiotic does that sound? I mean, like, it's... Now, Izzo being able to say every four-year class except one has visited the Final Four...
That's just crazy. That's a crazy number.
And yes, that's a great recruiting tool, right? But the tournament matters because the TV ratings. That is why the tournament matters. The tournament matters because of CBS. Like, that's it. The big I would rather be Kansas than UConn, winning a title once a decade, but being irrelevant for those 10 years in between.
I'd rather be Kansas because UConn has been found guilty of cheating.
Yeah, well, there's that too.
That to me is a bigger portion, you know. But I think what two national championships in a 15-year period, 12-year period? Am I close?
Who are we talking about?
UConn.
Yes. Yeah. Two or three. Three in 15 years or something. Three in 18 years or so.
Yeah.
But here's my problem, though, is until, like, as a program, from a program perspective, until we do reach the Final Four, though, we're going to have to be doing more with less. And, you know, until we can be known as a program that consistently at least make it to the Final Four or have a chance of making it to the Final Four with history to back it up, you know, we're not going to consistently get these five-star recruits or, you know, be a no-brainer for any recruit. And that's why, I mean, I think everyone expects now that, you know, now that Swinnigan is committed, the floodgates are open, but it's still going to be a struggle. We saw after, you know, after the Hummel, Martin, Juwan Johnson, Etuan Moore class, that, you know, just because you're great on paper at a certain time, it does not guarantee you that we're going to continue to refill the cupboard. And until we can be seen as a destination where someone can come and you know, have a good shot at making the national championship, that's always going to be recruited against us.
Yeah, I understand. I understand that. And it comes back down to the tournament matters because we've all decided it matters. And that's fine. Like, I love the tournament. It's my favorite sporting event of the year. And that's fine. But to base, like, a majority of your opinions of a season on that tournament is kind of absurd to me when we've already admitted the amount of randomness that happens. So I don't know.
I don't agree with that point at all because of the serial winners. I mean, it's consistent. I don't think it's. I think the first couple rounds might be random. You might get knocked off if you're a good program random. But
We're comparing these teams. How many times have we heard, oh, Duke loses in the second round? Who cares? Like, you know, Duke was knocked off by a 15 seed. They're not that, you know, they failed to live up to expectations again. But again, you guys on the other side are using Duke and Coach K as one of those examples of somebody who gets there every year. You know why he gets there every year? Because he wins 30 damn games every single year. And he throws 30 games against the wall every March. And about 50% of the time he hits.
None of that seems random to me. But you just said, I don't think
exactly, just
randomness.
I'm saying the first goal of any good program should be to win your conference. Win your conference and push 30 games. And you will have a great shot at the tournament.
When you win your conference, you're going to be a number one seed. Right.
Yeah,
that's going to help. And that's, once again, not random. Like you just said, the difference, you know, between a one and a two, it's pretty massive. It's pretty massive. Statistically, it's colossal. So that's, once again, that's, I mean, you're a smarter guy than me. That's not random.
No, and no. I'm saying what happens in the tournament is random, but you can set yourself up for success, and you can set yourself up for consistent greatness based on what you do in the regular season. Nobody is going to be a consistent 7 seed that makes the Final Four. That's what I'm saying. There's no team that's going to be, there's no Mississippi State that's going to be a consistent 7 seed, 8 seed, 10 seed, and go to the Final Four every year. I am saying aim for a high seed, and then we'll go win because we have this team that has achieved a high seed. But to aim for, right now, in May of the previous year, to aim for where we'll finish in a single elimination tournament in a year is ridiculous to me. To me, let's win 30 games.
But I guess that's... Well, I guess, yes, that said that way, I get it, but that's what we have. That's the playoff we have.
If they win 30 games, because, I mean, if you say that's the goal, they win 30 games.
30 is insane.
It's ridiculous, and they're a one seed, and then you'd say, you know, anything less than right. Elite Eight is
exactly. Then you, I think even you, Anish, would say, well, gosh, I'll be very disappointed if this team
And we'll have that conversation then. I do not want to have that conversation now. Because
so you're
that's insane.
Yourself.
Well, yeah, because that's an insane conversation.
I know, but...
Predicting any of this, if you get right down to predicting any of it, it's pretty insane. It really is. When you think about how much early prognostication there's done and how much of an industry that in itself is, that's ridiculous. That's insane, and it's... I mean, that is time filler, right?
When you increase your sample size, you can get a better picture of what roughly where a team will be. So a season worth, like 35 games worth of data is obviously going to be a little more informative than, what is it, six games in the tournament, if you're lucky, you know, if you're the luckiest. I just fundamentally don't agree with talking about the tournament until February, right? Until we know what the team is, until we know what we're going to look like.
That goes back to the point that I had about, you know, there are a lot of variables if the team gels, if the chemistry works, mm-hmm. if the guys find their role, that whole thing. I agree with that. I agree with that, with that train of thought completely. I don't agree with the idea of the tournament being random. Because what you said, I think you actually help our argument over and over. Some guys just can't coach in that. But I think the bigger overarching theme is that at the end of the day, really, talent wins out.
Yeah. That's so let's see how talented we are. I mean, let's see. I think Matt Painter will do a great job with this. I think this team plays into all of Painter's strengths. The funny thing is that but 2 months ago, we were talking about this, or maybe it was one last year before Haas came, and I was talking about Painter's record with bigs, and you were questioning what that was. And at the time, it was Landry and Juwan Johnson.
You're subtweeting mother. You think I didn't see that today? You think I didn't see that? You think I'm not watching you at all times, Anish?
That's right. I mean, but now, again, at the time, you were probably right. At the time, I was just hoping that because of the small victories that he had gotten at our Carl Landry and Juwan Johnson, I was hoping that he was a bigs coach and that's how he could recruit. Now, that's what he is. He is we know that Coach Painter is a big man and defensive coach. That is who he is, and that is who Purdue will be for as long as Matt Painter is the head coach of us.
So let me just read. I finally found that tweet. Somebody said to us 29 minutes ago, Swinnegan reminds me a national championship is possibly under 41 games away.
Oh,
how about that, Anish?
Wow.
Well, one thing I find an interesting, like, little conflict here, a little paradox is you are as excited as anybody about this. Beside yourself with excitement, and yet you want everyone to pump the brakes on getting
too excited.
No,
I don't want to pump the brakes. If you want to say, go win me a Big Ten title this year, Painter, or it is a failed season, I will accept that. I will absolutely accept that because we have the talent to win. We have the talent to be a top three team, yeah. And we have the talent to push 28 wins.
Mm-hmm.
Go tell me that Painter will go to win the Big Ten, and I will be behind you all the way. Tell me that we need to win 28 games, set ourselves up great for the tournament, then hit be healthy and hit every break for March and play until April. That's insane.
I think the odds are longer saying Purdue will win the Big Ten with the Big Ten looking like what it does right now.
Yeah, I think they could
Final Eight.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be mad if they finished fifth, and then they, you know, but still made what, a six seed, five seed, it's matchups.
I think in that scenario, what Anish is saying, I think is better for recruiting and better for the program if you win the Big Ten and go to the Sweet 16 instead of finish fifth and go.
Win the Big Ten and go make it to the Sweet 16 with this team. Successful season to me.
Hell yeah.
That is a legitimate banner hanging season.
But I mean, to your point too, you have to see where we are in February, right? If this team has 28, 29 wins, then suddenly you're like, well.
Yeah, exactly. And then we'll have that conversation. But right now, I don't know who's going to be healthy in March. I don't know how this team is going to gel in March, but what I do know is that I think we have the talent to, over a 20-game Big Ten season, we have the talent to beat a lot of the people that we're lined up against.
But I'm excited to have this conversation a year from now looking at that team. I don't even want to get into it now, but thinking that if no one leaves early,
It'll be fun. I think it'll be really fun. And I think Painter can get really creative. The problem is that the last couple of years, we've had Painter being creative with crap. He's had nothing to work with. And that's his fault. I'm not absolving him of any of that. But now he has a overflowing cupboard to work with. And now there's a lot of competition on the roster. One person doesn't show up. You know, if Matthias or Stevens doesn't show up, I'm sure Klein will be, you know, if he doesn't redshirt, he'll be itching to get some playing time. So I think Painter can get really creative. I'm excited.
So how do you guys wrap this thing up?
Well, usually it's really, really poor. It's really poorly done. Yeah. On the handsome hour, that's all I can say. That's the way we usually do it.
Hey,
I got a question for you guys. I got a quick question for you guys. Yeah. CJ Walker regretting his Deacon move right now.
I don't care. I don't care. Go away. I really don't care.
I like that First answer. Of all, I like on. That answer.
This is how we'll end it. This is how you do not burn bridges and walk away from a program. This. The way Bryson Scott congratulated Caleb Swanigan and said, they will love you. That is a guy that Purdue will miss, not on the court, but just having just that kind dude. Of guy. Yeah. We won't compare him to other people, but there are other ways, less successful ways, to take that road.
Saucy
and
ways.
I think exactly, and I think that Bryson did it very classily, and he left because he had a disagreement with Coach Painter. I'm pretty sure, pretty obvious with that.
But, you know, and I wouldn't expect that either. So that was actually kind of cool to hear.
Well, and he's awesome.
And he never, when he was in the games, he was. I mean, those two, both IU games, he was. Yep. It's not like he looked like he let that disagreement come on the floor with him. I didn't think. You know, he
played
knew,
his ass off.
Right, the writing was on the wall, but he played his ass off, and. That's more than you could say for, as you said, for other guys.
And to his credit, you could tell that he was trying to play the way Painter went.
Oh yeah, he was trying.
Which was against every
bone in his body. Yes,
exactly.
I think I just would like to congratulate him, and I would consider him as much like a boiler for life, if you will. As anybody else that comes through the program, he's a guy that he's the kind of personality that I think you'd rather hit on and maybe miss on the talent than some other people. So,
guys, here's what I can tell you. I can tell you this has been immensely fun. I have barely been able to stop myself sweating just out of excitement.
Yeah, I'm sweating. I'm so sweaty right now.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, like, it's a good thing. It's like a really good basketball practice, except I was sitting the whole time.
That makes it even better.
Yeah.
No movement.
Thanks for really bringing a lot of sauce.
Yeah, we got so much sauce.
So much sauce. So, and to everybody out there, don't forget your sponsor, which doesn't exist. There's no sponsor.
But you have available.
Sponsors are available. I guess that's the place.
Happy to pimp your product at the top and the bottom and the middle of the show and really in the post and really anytime we would.
The whole show, honestly.
we want your money. Just give us your money.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks especially to Dan Dawkins for tuning in and listening to the entire show. You've been listening to the Composite Basketball Beat and Boiled Sports Handsome Hour.
The Handsome Beat Off.
Beat Off all the time. BS all the time.
Sorry,
BS
all the time. That was it. Smoking weed and bamboo, sipping on private stock. Way back when I had the red and black lumberjack with the hat to match. Remember rapping Duke? The ha. You never thought that hip hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade. Born sinner, the opposite of a winner. Remember when I used to eat sardines for dinner? Peace to Ron G, Brucey B, Kid Capri. Funk Master Flex, Love Bug, Star Ski. I'm blowing up like you thought I would. Call a crib, same number, same hood. It's all good. And if you don't know, now you know, you know. And personal with Robin Leach, and I'm far from cheap. I smoke stuff with my peeps all day. Spread love, it's the Brooklyn way. The Moet and Alizé keep me pissy. Girls used to diss me, now they write letters because they miss me. I never thought it could happen. It's rapping.